The following presentation is a Barrett Sports Media production. Recognizing the unsung heroes of sports media.
I'm stuck in this pit, working for less than slave wages, working on my day off.
This is the Producers Podcast.
I'm a producer.
Oh, you're the executive producer.
Now, here's your host, Dimitri Robinos.
We did it! We fooled them and got a season two. And by the way, listen to that new voiceover, that new intro, huh? That is courtesy of Ryder Voiceovers. If you want to work with Ryder, go to his website, RyderVO.com. He's the voice of ESPN 630, the sports capital in Washington, D.C. He's the voice of 104.3, the Shark in Miami, and he was the voice of WAAF in Boston. May she rest in peace. Again, if you want to work with Ryder, RyderVO.com. I thought it would make a lot of sense to start out season two by talking to the producer of one of the biggest shows in sports radio. And that is why I went out and I made friends with John Goulet, producer of The Herd on Fox Sports Radio and, of course, on FS1. There was a lot in our conversation that made me think I am sort of like the fat, less successful version of John because we are both bald white guys. We both started our career in rock radio with an eye towards making it to sports one day. He now produces the biggest sports radio show in the world, and I now write about sports radio. So in a lot of ways, John, if you were looking in a funhouse mirror and wondering what would it look like if I were way less successful than I am right now, you would see Dimitri Robinos. All right, a lot we're going to get into here. First of all, amongst the things we are going to get into is what it's like doing a radio show on television and where John's duties end and TV producers' duties begin. What it's been like watching Colin learn how to do television and the advantages of working with someone like Joy Taylor, who also started her career on the radio side before getting into TV. This is a really great conversation. I will be back with a thought at the end of the show, like I was all during last season, but I don't want to waste any more of your time. Let's get into my chat with John Goulet from Fox Sports Radio. How do you and the TV crew work together in terms of production? I would imagine you have to give them some kind of heads up on what is going to be coming up on the show so that they can have the appropriate graphics ready.
Correct. So what this is like truly a simulcast, I think more than any other radio TV simulcast before. At ESPN when we did The Herd and we were on ESPNU and news, I think at one point, it was the TV show really didn't have anything to do with building the show. Their job was to cover the show and make it look presentable on TV.
Right.
But they were not doing content. They just made sure they had the cameras in the right spot. They knew the list of topics we were going to do and had appropriate graphics to build them. But that was about it. This one is different. Like, we do everything hand in hand with TV. Our meetings in the morning where we spend, 2 to 3 hours getting everything ready for the show. It's the radio people. It's TV people. It's everybody. The people that, like you mentioned, graphics, they're in the room listening along and contributing if they can. So they're right there with us. So there's certain prep that goes into a little bit, ahead of time in terms of letting them know what stories I'm going to put in front of Colin so they can get a jump start. But
right.
They're right along the entire process. I think, obviously, I don't work on Dan's show or Rich's, but I would assume more so than any other kind of simulcast.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have talked to some of the guys in the past that are sort of further off camera for Lebatard, and that is very much after they have their meeting, they come in and give it to the TV people and let them go from there. So I would imagine that, it must be a very different feel than any other pre-production meeting you had ever had before in radio. Like, it must be a much bigger room than you were used to.
Oh, God, it's laughable, man. It's laughable. Like, considering, like, I think back to ESPN when we would produce Colin, it was Vince and me, and then, like, the board op could chip in after he did some of the other, kind of tech stuff he had to do. That was it. That was the whole crew prepping the show. And now there's, like, me and the other radio producer, Greg, and there's TV producers, and TV has a thing called segment producers where, they're in charge of specific things, but, you know, Colin did a really good job of like creating this, hey, like if you have an idea for something or a line or a joke or a stat, like just say it. Like, I don't care who you are or what your job is. Like, I want everyone to feel like they can contribute to the show in whatever way. So everyone in there is encouraged to throw something out. If you have an idea for a topic, or if you saw some stat that goes along with what he's saying, or honestly, a lot of times if you have an opposite opinion and you want to argue it, you know, you can throw that out. So yeah, there it's crazy how many people are in there. Now they're all doing stuff. Obviously graphics people, they have to follow Colin's crazy train of thought and try to make it make sense. And there's other obviously struggles having radio. We want things to sound a certain way. TV wants things to be very visual. We have to always kind of find a way to make it work for both of us. But yeah, I mean, in terms of a staff, it's crazy how many people we have that can throw stuff out to build a 3-hour show every day.
So when people talk about what makes Colin good, one of the things that gets pointed to, or not just good, great. One of the things that gets pointed to a lot is his ability to develop analogies that are going to make things understandable, even to the guy that, you know, maybe watches a few NFL games a year. It sounds like those are not all just coming off of his head. That sounds like that might be kind of a group effort. Am I right?
I would say that they, you know, he always had done that.
Right.
So that's not something that, you know, like we have given to him. He kind of thinks that way. I think we kind of follow him in the sense that like some of us think in analogies now, because
right.
I know that if I come up with a good one, maybe it's going to be better than the one he comes up with or whatever. But one of the things that he does, even with a TV show where you have all these visuals that can help you, is that he'll say this out loud frequently. How do we make this sense to someone who's listening in his car, right? How do you make it make sense to someone who's on the 405 or wherever and is kind of paying attention, but is kind of thinking about whatever, work that day or fight or something that happened? So how do you just make it simple? And that's, I think, really what he does a good job of, and did not get affected by TV, because TV can put so much up there graphically to illustrate a point, but he kind of maintains that, like, the guy in the car has to be able to understand this. The guy listening on a podcast, you know, whatever, riding the train to work, like that, they have to be able to understand. So he tries to keep it simple. But I think in all the years I've worked with Colin, I feel like naturally people just start thinking in analogies.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to explain it to a couple of people on the staff who are new. You know, we had like a researcher that joined the show that, you know, kind of came up with one, and he kind of, I had to talk him through the scary process. Like, okay, you're thinking differently now. It's okay. You're kind of thinking like Colin. It's a little scary at first, but you get used to it after a while.
Yeah, I could see how that would be almost like an aha moment, that things are coming together for you and you're where you belong at that point.
Yeah.
How often are, whether it is just you and Colin, or you, Colin, and Joy, or everybody on the radio side, what kind of conversations, or what do those conversations sound like when you're making sure that even though this is a true simulcast, it still works the way it's supposed to for the guy not watching the TV version?
So, you know, it was, I wouldn't say it was a struggle, but early on it was something we had to be more cognizant of. And one of the things that what helped was originally our producer, and he's not with us anymore, but one of our producers had come from radio.
Mm-hmm.
So, from one of the TV producers, excuse me. So he knew a little bit more about the radio side of things, and he understood some of that. So that helped. But it's really just about sitting there and every once in a while just having to shoot down an idea of, hey, that doesn't work for us.
Right.
So how can we switch it? Right. And it's pretty rare. And a lot of the TV guys here have adapted that, and they understand that we can't have a completely visual thing. So it's mostly just about not being afraid to be the jerk in the room, and especially when there's a really good idea and have to go, okay, no, hold on. That doesn't work unless you can see it.
Right.
So we can't do that. So, and then sometimes we can find other ways to do it. There's a, you know, there's a little 2-minute segment on our little kind of lead up at the end of the show to speak for yourself that is not on radio. It's just on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So we can always put it there, because then we don't care. Or is there something we can do in order to make it work for both sides? And listen, there's been a couple of times in the 4.5 years where we've kind of on radio just had to bite the bullet a little
bit.
Yeah, for example, so we have Greg Cosell on every week, and Greg's great, but and on radio or TV, but he does a play that he diagrams at the end of the segment where he draws, like, you know, there's visual elements to, okay, these three receivers are over here. They kind of draw the routes on the screen. You know, he works on NFL matchup show. So he basically does a play like NFL matchup. It's too good to not do. Right. Like, it's just it. Colin loves it. I stop listening and I watch it as I'm sitting there on the stage because it's just awesome content. I'm not going to fight on that. It's too good. Like, is it bad on radio? I don't know. He's kind of describing, like, what we've done is we've worked with him on, don't say, you see here, these guys, like, describe the play a little bit more, give it a little more detail in terms of audio. That way, if you are in your car, you're not totally lost as to what's going on. But it's not great on radio. I understand that. But it's so good on TV that I'm willing to eat the 30 seconds of bad radio that it is in order to improve the TV product.
So
it's just about, you know, not, it's just about picking battles and kind of figuring out and giving a little bit here and there.
So then it sounds like you're not in Colin and Joy's ears getting them to think about this, that this conversation has been had well before the cameras and the microphones go on.
Yeah, very rarely, because Colin comes from radio, so he understands what works and what doesn't. And also, Joy comes from radio. Even she was on Undisputed before us, but she did radio in Miami, so she's the same way. So they understand what works and what doesn't. And a lot of the TV people, we've told them, and every once in a while they throw out an idea that doesn't work. But like I said, we have a very open room where there's not any hard feelings if I say, hey, that doesn't work for us. We can't do that. You know, no one really seems to mind. So it's just about being verbal. And sometimes, you know, you don't want to be the jerk and you don't want to be like, hey, that idea, we can't do that. But we kind of have an open discussion where it's fine. And after so many years now, it's pretty rare that stuff comes up where we really have to argue about that back and forth.
So as a producer, because anybody that has been on that side of the glass knows what tight quarters you are used to working in, what was it like getting used to that huge stage? I mean, we saw each other down in Miami, and I would imagine that the set you guys had built down on South Beach, size-wise, at least mimics what you have in LA. And that was gigantic.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, I mean, we have this huge sounds. The whole thing is a trip, right? So I don't know that you've been down here, but like, we're on the Fox lot,
right?
So like, when I drive into work and I looked, I guess Disney owns it now, whatever, but when you drive in, you look to the left, it looks like Brooklyn because it's set up so they can shoot stuff outside. When you drive in, you can see if any, like the bar that they're always at and How I Met Your Mother, like you can see it, like it's right there. There's a diner that if you watch a couple hours of TV on any channel, you will see this diner because it's in commercials, it's in shows. Like, you see the exterior of it. So it's crazy. And then you come in and, yeah, like, we have this huge, huge TV set where if you've watched the transition from show to show on FS1, like, we come in and Undisputed is doing their show on one half.
Right.
And our entire set is set up on the other half. That's how big it is, that they can have two full sets right next to each other. So yeah, it was a little bit new experience for me. I'm used to tiny little booths. Like, we look like we're in a booth, but really they just put up a little piece of plastic in front of us to block some of the noise. But really we're just on the TV set and they stuck a board, you know, underneath this staircase that goes to nowhere, but they use it for all kind of visual sets. And yeah, I mean, it was crazy. Like, the coming from, you know, I came from working in San Francisco at a local station that had this really old setup,
right?
Into, I drive right down here and like, okay, let's check out your little booth. And I'm thinking I'm going to be in some little closet, and they're like, no, you're on the set, you're staring right at Colin, and we have this huge thing. And you know, it's crazy to see too, because after we're done, like, Lock It In uses our, so like, a bunch of crew guys come in and rip our set down in 2 seconds and get ready for the next show. And that's just how TV does stuff. It's so different than working in radio where, you know, the changeover is like the other hosts kind of come in and you kind of, you know, shoot the shit with the producer that's coming in after you. And it's very casual, and it's way different here. TV is not as casual. They are serious.
So do you know, cause you're on a soundstage that has been used for years, right? Like, do you know what else?
Yeah.
Is
I mean,
taped
we're
here?
Like, if you've ever, yeah, I mean, every other, So every Fox show that's here, there's two of these stages, right? We are not the one that is used by like Fox NFL Sunday, but it's next to it. But, you know, Collins' NFL kickoff show that's Sunday before NFL on Fox, like that's from our studio as well. All the baseball pre and post, all the stuff, like all that stuff is on one of these two stages that are right here. So it's just, it's crazy that we do our radio show from a place like that. Like I just never thought that would be happening. And acoustically, there are some challenges with that because we're in this massive wide open space.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy that like all these other shows that, you know, you like grow, like I've been watching Terry Bradshaw, yeah, you know, on TV since I was a little kid. And now it's like, oh, that's where we are. That's where I'm doing a show right now.
Yeah. So at least these are set up for sports broadcasts. It's not like you can find the laugh track from some failed Fox show out back in the corner.
No, that would be down. Every once in a while, if you walk around the sets here, though, you will see like sets like on trucks, like getting up and it'll be like, oh, right. It says like New Girl on it or whatever. All these like Always Sunny. And like you see all these things and you're like, so weird, like they film all of this stuff right here. It's
right.
Weird watching TV shows and you're like, oh, I know where that is. We had our Christmas party out there and I was drinking a beer at that spot. It's kind of weird.
So you talked about you drive in and you see Brooklyn out to one side. Like, is it like the old school sort of Hollywood where you walk outside your building and there's a cowboy over one shoulder and an alien over the other? Like, are people just walking around there like a regular
not quite It's not like that. Yeah, it's not like Blazing Saddles where they're all just sitting around in like a cafeteria and all the people and characters. It's not quite like that, but you can walk around and see them filming stuff, or you know, there will be like I'll go out, you know, past security gate. Sometimes they'll be filming stuff right outside. They'll have a bunch of like sheets up for blocking and whatever. But I mean, yeah, it's still an active set that they use all the time. Not our building, obviously. Our building is just Fox Sports,
right.
But. Yeah, I mean, some of that stuff is being filmed 100, 200 feet away from where we do the herd. It's crazy.
So not just Colin, but the sound of the show in general is held in extremely high regard. I mean, you guys kind of live at the top of the BSM top 20 for national shows year in and year out. As the producer, though, your job is to always think about where the show can be better. So what is at the top of that list for you right now?
Ooh, I think one thing I don't have to worry about with Colin, which I appreciate, is that, you know, he is kind of always trying to get better.
Right.
He does it like TV to him was a little bit of a challenge. So he works really hard at that. I mean, I think one of the things we sometimes can struggle with a little bit, I guess I would say sometimes our breaking news stuff can be we need to be a little stronger. We're such a prep based show. Colin is just works so hard before the show to go through everything that sometimes I think our breaking news stuff can be a little lacking. So that's it's one of the things I guess you could say we probably need to improve upon. Cause sometimes Colin's just a thinker. He just likes to have time to think about stuff and work it out, and he'll talk to people. You know, he almost acts like a journalist, but not in the sense that he wants to break news. He just wants information to inform his opinion better. So sometimes we can struggle a little bit when something breaks on our show because we are just so used to having the time to, you know, to build better stuff TV wise and do more research and kind of talk some things out. We can't do that obviously live on the air. So I would say that's one of the places I guess we need to improve. Maybe there are probably others that would say, stop talking about Baker Mayfield. that would improve stop talking about Aaron Rodgers, whatever. But I don't know. Those are the kind of things that I think make the show fun. So
yeah.
I like doing that.
So, you know, I end the show by asking everybody the same two questions. So it is your turn now. What do you wish Colin understood better about your job?
I do know how to end the show. I probably should have thought of that answer beforehand. let's see. I guess I wish he understood sometimes how it is like impossible to figure out ahead of time what he's going to say. So sometimes I'll throw stuff in front of him thinking like this will be a good topic.
Right.
And he'll have no interest in it. Not that he gets upset, but it's more like, I don't think he understands how he thinks differently than like everybody.
Interesting.
And I've been working with him for a long time, and still to this day, like, I still think he's going to go one way on a story and he'll go completely the opposite. Like, I still don't always have it pegged where he's going to come from on topics.
Right.
So I wouldn't say it's like a problem with this. Like, it's kind of the fun of the show mm-hmm. at the same time. Like, going in, like, I have an idea what I think he's going to talk about. I really don't know. Like, yeah. I try to have an idea, but I don't think he understands always like how tough it can be to peg where he's going to go with something.
Right. So it's not like you give him a stack of prep and he just smacks it all off the table.
Oh God. No, never. I mean, he turns stuff down, but no, it's like I said before, it's a very open, like, hey, throw stuff out. Give me, right. you know, it's a probably bad analogy because the show's not on anymore, but you remember the show House
yep.
where all his, you know, doctors would kind of throw out like random stuff and it would spark like stupid ideas in his head that had nothing to do with anything.
Right.
But that's kind of what we do, right? It's not always about like throwing it like, hey, I have a good idea. Sometimes having like a horrible idea is actually really beneficial.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's just about getting him on some path where then he can dive in and go, you know, cause obviously most of the stuff he can come up with on his own. He doesn't need someone to help him out. But, you know, listen, we over-prep most days. Most days we have two topics that I don't even think we get to on the air that we fully worked out in the meeting. So we always like to overdo it. And sometimes just getting and sparking him anything can be beneficial.
Yeah. And so the last question I ask everybody, what do you want to do next?
You know, it's crazy. I always wanted to be a program director.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, my dad was on the air, which was really cool. But when I was 11 or 12, he became a program director of a rock station in Hartford. And I loved that aspect of it. Like when I would come in, you know, when I was in the summer or whatever, if I would come in to work with him and like, I loved sitting in his office. Until he went on the air. When he went on the air, it was kind of like, yeah, you know, you talk about music, whatever. Okay.
Right.
But I loved watching him run the station and decide things. So that was always what I wanted to do. And that was originally why when I left ESPN to work in San Francisco for your boss, that was the path I kind of wanted to take, was I wanted to learn how to do that and go down that avenue. And then this opportunity with Colin presented itself, and it was too good to turn down. It was such an amazing opportunity to not only do the TV show, but work at Fox. And, you know, it was just great. So I kind of diverged from that. So I would kind of say program director, but I would have a caveat of just like, I try not to be so beholden to one thing. Cause mm-hmm. our industry, you know, it changes so rapidly, right? Like 5 years ago, if you had said like being in charge of a podcast network was a job, it'd be like, well, that's dumb.
You're right.
Now you're like, no, that's like a real thing. And that's, you know, those kind of areas are growing more. So I try not to be so, you know, I mean, hell, I used to always be in radio, and now I work, like I said, on a freaking TV stage. We couldn't have seen that coming. So, you know, I guess a program director is the easy answer. I would say some kind of management role overseeing, you know, a large group of whether it be shows or podcasts or whatever it may be. That's kind of the next step for me, I would say.
I can see how as a kid, particularly, like I didn't grow up with parents in this business at all, but I started in radio probably about the same time you did, you know, being on air 15, 16 years old. I can see how at some point going to work with your dad, sitting in studio, watching him do the on-air portion of thing, you feel like, I've seen you say all there is to say about Boston, that creating promotion packages would be a little bit more exciting and different.
It's what's funny is that's what changed for me. I had always wanted to be like, you know, on rock stations. I grew up, I loved music and sports, obviously like a lot of kids. And
yeah.
That was always my plan. But then similar to what you just said, like I used to do overnights, my dad's station, in the summers, and you're like, good Lord, like how many times do I have to hear this song?
Yeah.
Like it does. And like, these are bands that I like, and you know, and like people call in and request the same song. Like how many times can you hear Smells Like Teen Spirit?
No,
I love Nirvana too, but there's something else. And that, you know, you just get to a point where you're like, God, I wish this would sports changes every day. That seems
right.
So much better than just playing the same song over and over and over again. So I had the same kind of revelation.
When I was doing rock morning shows, you know, it was right around the time PPM kind of came to our market. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina. And, you know, our talk time started getting cut back, and I would tell my program director, I have trouble imagining that there is somebody in his car thinking Dimitri is really funny right now, but I sure hope he shuts up and plays Back in Black for the fourth time this morning.
Yeah, it's crazy the way that has all gotten dialed back. And it's just, I mean, it's kind of where the first time, like, you learn the whole play the hits thing.
Right.
Where, because I used to always, like, people would call in for requests, and I would edit them to make it sound like they just asked for a band instead of a specific song, because I got tired of the same songs over. But it's like, oh, no, people just want, like, the same few songs over and over again. And that, like, I always try to remember that, because, like, when we're sitting here thinking, like, could we ever do another Aaron Rodgers thing? You're like, no, that's what people want, man. Like, they just want to hear about the same few players. They may bitch about us on Twitter, but the majority of people just want to hear the same few things over and over again.
I want to thank John. That conversation was a lot of fun. And it was really cool to sort of hear about the way your mind has to work when you're working with somebody whose mind works like Colin Cowherd's mind works. The word mind and works, did I use it enough for you to understand? All right, so our first lesson of the season is going to be about consistency and keeping at it, because when season one of the Producers Podcast launched, I heard from producers all over the country asking, what do I have to do to be profiled on this episode or on this podcast? And listen, before season one even launched, I recorded every single episode already because JB and I didn't quite know how we were going to roll it out. So anybody that reached out, I said, do me a favor, hang on to my contact info, reach out around Christmas time, because that is when we're going to start plotting out season two, rather, of the Producers Podcast. When I say I heard from producers everywhere, I'm talking about around a dozen people. Guess how many people I heard from around Christmas time? Zero. And I don't even remember whether or not I reached back out to any of those people, because I don't remember who reached out to me. Look, if you are trying to further your career, whether it is going for a job, whether it is trying to be profiled on this podcast, you have to be relentless. What is the worst that is going to happen? I'm going to tell you to buzz off. I'm going to tell you no, but here's the thing. I'm going to remember you. And when I have a slot open, I am going to think about you. Whether that's good or bad doesn't matter. Your job is to be memorable when you are trying to get some sort of attention for yourself, right? So, look, if you reached out to me last year and I didn't reach out to you again to start this season, things are not done, right? Like, we haven't recorded all the episodes for season two yet, so please reach back out. It makes my job easier when people come to me and say, I want to be a part of this show. Now, I will tell you, we are trying to focus on some bigger markets this season that we did not hit last year. So, you may reach out and I may say, hey man, look, for this season, it's just not right. But please reach out. At Dimitri Ravanis on Twitter is the easiest way to get in touch with me. Thank you so much for listening to Season 2, Episode 1 of the Producers Podcast. We will talk to you next week.
Unbelievable, baby. The show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Producers Podcast. To connect with Dimitri, follow him on Twitter at Dimitri Ravanos. And for the latest sports media news, visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com. We'll be right back.